are listening to Seniors Junction Podcast. We are preventing seniors isolation, one conversation at a time. Your hosts today, Dr. Namrata Bagaria, and myself, Dr. Paul Merkley, with the co-founders of Seniors Junction, and our very, very special guest today, Dr. Robert Stebbins, professor at the University of Calgary, person who coined the term serious leisure. Welcome very much. Welcome.
Pleased to be here.
Okay. So could you tell us a bit about yourself and what you do?
Okay. First of all, I am retired. I took early retirement from the University of Calgary's Department of Sociology in the year 2000. I thought, well, we should start this century off properly so that I could devote myself to my work. Otherwise, there was teaching and committees and all the stuff that goes with being a university prof. So that also triggered a more accelerated pace of publication, more books, more articles, and more experience with this creature called the serious leisure perspective, which I will refer to from time to time by the acronym SLP. So I'm still going at it. I'm 83 years of age, and so far I don't show any signs of demise. Even if I have blood clots in my lungs, they're supposed to go away eventually. So I continue to breathe and work and get my metabolism up, and it's all a lot of fun. So
that's great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I will talk about an organization a bit later. Our attempt to link lifelong learning with the third University of the Third Age, and do that through the SLP. So that's to come a little later in our production.
That's great. Well, you are our hero. That's just wonderful. Mm-hmm. That's all great.
And
now, go ahead.
Yes. So my question to you is, Professor, you must have come across isolation as a concern in the work that you do. So could you tell us about what are the pain points, according to you, in senior isolation?
Well, seniors by age are to some extent isolated in that they can't get out as they used to be able to. Now, people come to visit them, and if they're in a care center, there's activities that they can participate in and people they can meet with. But we might call it a growing isolation, a diminished social world. And I've observed this in part through my own experience as being a senior, even though I'm independently housed in an apartment. And also in the people that I've interviewed over the years. I've studied a large number of amateurs and hobbyists, something like 18 studies. And these have been qualitative projects and involved me interviewing people and a little later having some help from a student doing the interviewing. But in the observation and the interviews in that vast number of studies, I come up against the problem of isolation. And what do older seniors do? Now, in my sampling, obviously, they were already into a serious leisure project. They were astronomers or barbershop singers. They, and many of the people I interviewed, of course, were much younger. And then my main project was to write the book, Planning Your Time in Retirement, a publication about leisure lifestyle in old age, and published by Roman and Littlefield in 2013. So to put that book together, which is an application of the SLP for elderly people, some of whom have what I call a homebody lifestyle. And they may get out once in a while, but most of what they do for leisure is contained within the four walls of their house or apartment, or if it's a house, their back garden, that sort of thing. Rarely do they go from there, except to get supplies for food and maybe for their hobby. If they're growing things in the back garden, they may have to get out to get some fertilizer or a new spade or whatever. But most of the time, these homebodies discussed in that book suffer with isolation, though they find it a good lifestyle. So let me say that a main problem for seniors, isolated or not, is boredom. How do we counteract? And watching television isn't much help. It is one of the most enduring, globally speaking, forms of leisure activities, but it isn't all that much fun. And there's plenty of evidence to indicate that most people prefer to do something else if they could figure out what it is that they would do. And so the antidote to that, of course, is to try to find an interesting form of leisure. And maybe I should stop there and let you advance the discussion, because I have more things to say on the matter.
It's great. It makes a lot of sense. And I'm in that boat, right? I'm a widower and a senior, and I do not watch television. It just does not do much for me. So yes, I turn to other things for purpose. This is really my purpose. So you've articulated, you've of course published your vision, and you've articulated a lot of it just now. Is there anything you want to add to it? And, you know, we are a company that wants to prescribe serious leisure for people. What more would, go ahead, add a little more if you like.
The first step typically is to find a leisure activity that's appealing. And most people don't walk around this world with a list of activities. They do things and that's it. But there's hundreds of activities. So my first advice is to go to Wikipedia and plug in list of hobbies. And then the list of hobbies will come up, and it's quite substantial. It's amazing what's there. And you can click on one of them, say cards, and then you'll go to another page that talks all about card games. some of those things are actually amateur activities, like music and various sports, and even some sciences. But the large part is hobbies, which the amateur activities have a professional counterpart, but the hobbies don't. So they don't have that model that says, this is what really good violin playing looks like, or outstanding amateur astronomy looks like. There'll be people who are known in the community as great model railroaders, but it's not quite the same as having somebody who makes their living doing that, because they can't. It's not, we don't pay people to do that, unless they love it. So in this list, my advice is concentrate on the indoor activities and that are considered hobbies. And when you get to cards, there is solitaire, and you say, well, yeah, that we used to do that as kids. There are scores of solitaire games. You could relieve boredom, if you like solitaire, just by trying different versions of that game. So there, one should go to, straight away, on Wikipedia, solitaire, and be informed. Otherwise, the indoor hobbies, that includes collecting indoors, And that can be problematic because you may have to leave the place to get what you want. So that will have to be taken with a grain of salt. One hobby of the collection variety is ant keeping. Well, you don't have to leave home to find ants. So take it from there. There are competitive hobbies. So, and they too have an indoor manifestation. And observational hobbies, you could set up a telescope in your back garden. And if the light pollution's not too bad, get some interesting observations. So this is to help people make some preliminary choices. Sounds interesting to me to engage in quilting. You can quilt at home, or knitting, or astronomy, etc. Then the question is, what's next? And here's where I think we need some kind of mentoring service that people who got to this list or already have some kind of hobbyist interest can turn to for advice. Because a lot of this is lifelong learning and it's self-directed learning. You're not going to be able, in many cases, to take a course. Or the course will just tell you how to do it, but not how to pursue it. You know, is there a club? Can I join it? What's it cost? What does it do? Are there events for, we'll say, quilters? Indeed, there are. Expositions and so on. So a mentor would help the participant find what he or she needs to pursue that hobby. And the end result is to develop oneself, develop an identity that, you know, I'm pretty special in this world. I'm a good quilter. Or I'm a good furniture maker. And people like my stuff. And it's fun to do because I like working with my hands. stamp collecting is a good one, except that we're running out of stamps. So I don't think it's going to be a particularly good advice for the future. And but other kinds of collections might work. It depends on how much the senior can get out or somebody can bring things in. Anyway, this mentor, I envisage a team of mentors that would be linked to individual neophyte hobbyists to help advise that person about how to find a club, how to find materials, how to survive or get over the rough spots, because there's always some challenges that the participant faces. And he or she will need some sort of sympathetic, motivating support. And the mentor would be formed in the essence of the serious leisure perspective and be able to give some advice. It wouldn't necessarily have to be that kind of hobbyist, but would understand what hobbyists in general go through. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. And this could all take place by Skype or Zoom, yeah.
We've been we've been designing our curriculum with an end-to-end conception in mind, so that we're thinking, well, after you've done this, what will you do next? What's the pathway to your mastery in this activity? If it's history, Is there a pathway towards your becoming a volunteer in a museum? Yes, if we design it that way. Yeah. So we have been thinking along those lines ourselves. Very important. And I wanted to just sneak in a question. Do you find, or is it your thought that the social aspect of the hobby is important? In other words, whatever you're doing, it's important to be able to talk to other people about it.
Yes. Some of the collection hobbies are probably, you can do them in relative isolation. But if you really like your stuff, you're going to want to talk to others. Now, you can talk to relatives, but that may only go so far. Here comes old George and he wants to talk again about stamps. And most of the relatives don't care about stamps. So it can be a burden on relationships. But one of the things about these hobbies is that each has its own social world, including clubs, including informal get-togethers, maybe over coffee, or if it's a sport, say in a pub, throwing darts, all right, everybody shows up, throw some darts, have a pint or two of ale, stumble home, and you've had a night with fellow dartists or darters. So if they're in isolation forced by COVID, that's obviously going to have to be, taken into consideration. But that appears to be changing. Seniors are vulnerable, so they may not change as rapidly. And there's always a question of transportation and so on. But going for coffee, whether it's Starbucks or someplace else, is a way of meeting an interesting ground to talk with people. And they could all share the same interest. Yeah. And or they can form a club. There's many cities have an astronomy club. And many of those people in the club don't actually actively observe, or they do in their backyard, but they don't go out in the middle of the night when the weather's good and look at certain stars, make calculations that they can send into a clearinghouse and actually participate as scientists. So others just do it because they don't like to be lost in the stars. It's an amazing experience. And so you might say the same about mineralogy, except that the mineralogist goes out into the field and gathers stuff. So if you're old, you may not be so good at walking off trail or find interesting minerals, as it were. But all of this, it depends on the participant, and the mentor has to be sensitive to these idiosyncrasies. But there is still is a vast world of hobbies, and to arrange for social contact to the extent that the participant wants it and can profit from it. So some are more reclusive than others. So the mentors would be, they'd have to be trained to some extent. And that itself would become a form of serious leisure.
Yes, the volunteer variety. That's what we think too. That's what we think too.
Yeah, yeah. So I've got a little paper on mentoring as informal volunteering. And it's fun to do. It can be frustrating, but it's a huge contribution. And we need a link between the participant and the world of leisure often. I mean, there's some who can find their own way.
Yes.
But yeah. They still need a list. And that's why I put that up front. A list of hobbies that Wikipedia over the years has been building. I've contributed to it a bit, But before I did that, there was already a bunch of stuff. And it continues to grow. It's a huge service to our leisure lifestyles. So I think.
Thank you.
Yeah. So we need to work on the mentoring issue. That's the challenge, theoretically, for the SLP and its outreach aspect. In the meanwhile, there's all kinds of research going on, but that's another story, and it really doesn't bear on our podcast today, except to note that there is plenty of it.
Go ahead, Dom.
Yeah, so we're close to 2,900 references on various aspects of the perspective, and some of this work is qualitative, some of it's quantitative, but it's anchored. The concepts, serious leisure, casual leisure, project-based leisure, the various rewards that go with this, and so on, and the identifying characteristics, they're anchored empirically. So this is not a theoretical or philosophical pie in the sky. This is real stuff. Yeah. And when you talk to people who do serious leisure, they will come back to you as an interviewer and say why this is important. So what's not so well known is the general public often is ignorant of it. So that makes life for this serious leisure participant a bit problematic. Because as one amateur archaeologist told me, so I tell my friends what I do, oh, that sounds like work. We don't want anything to do with it. Because what you're doing is getting out in the dirt and particularly scraping away the dust and the dirt and what have you for artifacts laying below the surface. And for an archaeologist, that's exciting. So, and for the science, it's a valuable contribution. So the essence of this perspective called serious leisure, but there's plenty of emphasis too on the casual leisure part and maybe too on the project aspect. Making a big puzzle in isolation, not putting it together, is a project. Now, if you sit down, as soon as you finish one, you go out and buy another. And so it becomes a routine activity. Then it becomes a hobby. But there are many people who just make one immense puzzle and soon it gets swept off the dining room table for obvious reasons. And that's the end of it. But that was, while it was being undertaken, a big project of great interest. And interest rises as you get closer to finishing it. So, in psychology, we call the goal gradient that as we get to the end of a project and putting and finishing touches on it, we get more frenzied and want to complete it because we want to see the final result. But we shouldn't conflate serious leisure perspective with it only being serious leisure. We're talking about that, but casual leisure is important too. And the participant may go to coffee to talk about, we'll say, kite flying. But at the same time, then the subject drifts to problems with grandchildren or the difficulties of driving a car at age 83 or whatever, getting a driver's license renewed. So then casual leisure enters and becomes a sort of rest from the discussion of serious leisure. Or you spend all morning practicing the violin. Well, you're worn out now. So in the afternoon, you might watch some TV, even take a nap, both casual leisure. So they go to make a lifestyle, a leisure lifestyle that is good because it is effective, because it manages to give people balance. The challenges of the leisure, they're there. Perseverance is necessary, effort's necessary, but one needs a rest. And that can be coffee with people, a nap, a lunch, or another activity. So I practice the violin all morning, or much of it, but I read in the afternoon. And I could read seriously, because I haven't been using that set of skills. So in all this, the serious side enables us to realize our talents and our tastes for things. You know, people who love wine, well, maybe I'll get in to make my own. We'll soon discover that they don't make it to their taste, but after a while, when they learn about it, they get better. And not everybody will agree with that, but because George with his damn wine, I don't know, must I drink this stuff? So, but winemaking, and that you can do at home, obviously, is interesting, and the wine does all the work of fermenting. You just have to change casks from time to time, then drink the stuff, find a place to store it in the meantime. So and give away a bottle or two and see if you make friends or lose them as a result. So we've all been there.
Yeah.
So maybe I've given enough of this to show you something of the grand lines about how this actually works for people entering an activity that's going to consume their life if they like it.
Yeah. I think one of the challenges that we observe, the couple of, like, so if you look from the beginning, where and how we are looking at it is personalizing serious leisure in the beginning. What do I like? How do I like? Yes, initially we can have questionnaires and people are going to try. So the way we're looking at is help them narrow down a list and then give them a few courses, which are 8 week each. Each course has like an assignment part, which they do at home, and there's a group class discussion. So we try to take care of their autonomy, their connected autonomy, their, so that they talk and they spend time, because many times people don't talk to anybody that's at home the whole time. So the concepts of ikigai, onai, purpose, we're trying to fit in within what we are doing. And I think the challenge lies in getting comprehensive. In terms of the bridge, the course instructors, some of them are themselves retired professors or people who offer courses like you mentioned, Cards and Paul will be teaching bridge for 8 weeks. He teaches history of music, film music. So we are trying to come up with unique ideas which are very pertinent to people born in the boomer and the pre-boomer generation, which is this. And we try to make courses which are more interesting. Yes, inbound, because even for us to scale, it has to be technology driven. And then when somebody joins, we ask them their goals. So we give them four options. Do you want to become a freelancer, a volunteer, a mentor, or a hobbyist? And then from that, you know, then we try to help them out with the journey or the pathway, because habit building is then another set of activity. Continuously keeping up the motivation is another set of work we have to do. But I think in the beginning, it's just getting people together, offering those courses, creating that. And once they graduate from the course, actually, we have follow-up, like every month they get together and do something and they update each other. So those are the kind of ideas we are, since we are a very relatively new startup, like it's in the beginning, we are working with what's within our reach. And then of course, to scale it is another, because most people really plan decently well for the financial of retirement. They don't really plan on the purpose. They don't really plan on to what will get me out of bed every day. And sometimes life throws you a curveball. You know, you may have imagined, like Paul says, magically dying at the same time with your spouse, but that really doesn't happen. And also what happens, I have seen, is there are many people who don't grieve enough. So what happens is there is a triggering event, whether you've downsized, whether you've lost a partner or lost a child, or any kind of, or your friends or somebody or the other. So this so-called losses are happening one after the other. And at the same time, you are, you know, your social determinants of health are changing. You are changing as a person. So we have something like a threshold, and a threshold is below which you have clinical needs, whether it's physical health, mental health, psychological health. And above the threshold is where we feel just leisure activities and having a routine and having something to look forward to get out of the bed, to aspire to something, to find that mastery of something is what can get us there. Because one part is connecting with people, and the other part is, what do I do with myself? Solitude. And we have to strengthen those two together and create connected autonomy for people.
Yeah, the nice thing about the serious leisure side is that it connects one to an activity that others also do. And so there's that shared ground of, you know, winemaking or bridge playing or making music that everybody's excited about. And, you know, around here in the Rocky Mountains, you get seniors who go hiking. And so there are hiking clubs. And that leads to all sorts of discussion about the nature of trails, the views from those trails, the animals seen while it's en route, et cetera. And those clubs meet from time to time. They may meet for a dinner. They may meet for a guest speaker. They usually have to meet for their annual general meeting, that kind of thing. And then there's the problem of coordinating outings in the mountains. You know, somebody's got to organize it and lead it, and then be sure that those who go are capable of going where they're going to walk, and not just an inaccurate estimate of their capacity. So there's that challenge. So all of that's social, and then getting out to the sites, it's a carpooling. So you're in a car with two or three other people, and you're going to be busy talking about hiking and about the mountains, about the damned weather, and that sort of thing. So they get to be very rich, and there will be stories about the last time I did this trail, thus and such happened. And so people like to tell stories and like to hear others' tales as well. So that's part of it. It's very much a social end to it. Collecting, probably the least social, but Even then, collectors have expositions. So people collecting coins gather up their collection and go somewhere to show what they've got. And others interested in coins are parading back and forth looking at those displays.
What advice do you have for our company? You know a bit about what we do and that we're just getting started. Do you have advice for us?
Well, advice is, can you help with this mentoring thing? That's not advice, it's a question. lifelong learning is a bit of a buzzword. And we don't want to diminish it, but it doesn't lead particularly to self-fulfillment, because people can sign up for this course, that course. It's more like going to a Swedish smörgåsbord, as they say. There's hundreds of things to eat. Eat this and eat that, and very good. But you don't typically come back with some kind of personal development. And the serious leisure stuff, you discover a career, not an occupational career, although that can happen, but most are involved in an activity at which they get better. They have a career of self-improvement. And so lifelong learning doesn't emphasize that as becoming a participant, as a hobbyist or an amateur or a volunteer. They all have that career sense of finding oneself, one's abilities, one's identity, and one's tastes. So, and the old expression about one man's meat is another's poison is true here too. We start out with quilting. There's very few men that quilt, according to our research. For obviously, for them it's poison, but for many women, it's hugely rewarding. So now, men don't have to quilt to figure that out. And women don't have to engage in martial arts to find out that it's not for them, although some do. So, but others might, you know, I don't know about this business of bridge, one might say, male or female. Too much sitting around, too cerebral. I want another kind of activity. So what needs to be done with a mentor is a mentor helps the mentee work through a list of hobbies and choose, we'll say, three that offer good potential for personal involvement. And so Seniors Junction could have that wing of SLP mentoring. And it can be done by Skype, Zoom, whatever. We can't be all over the world, so I don't see the mentors getting in the car and driving across town. So that's another angle, but the modern world is electronic, and we have to learn to live with that.
And Professor, if people want to find more about you and your work, how can they find you?
Okay, now I have a website, www.seriousleisure, all one word, www.ecmc.net. And some of it is overwhelming. The bibliography side is not for most people, but there is a section explaining the key concepts, entitled concept, a concept page. And some information about me, CV and my books and so on. But they can go there. Now, there is a set of podcasts. I think they're pretty well done, developed by a trio of scholars at the University of the West of England at Bristol. And they are putting together and have largely completed a project that looks at what the SLP is and then gives a podcast of about an hour into key activities. There's one on fishing, for instance, another on tennis playing, and they could be useful as well. I'll be able to find out soon just how people can plug into these and profit from having people talk, and basically like you're doing here. One of the three professors will have interviewed somebody who likes, I guess, fly fishing, so that that person would talk about the ins and outs of that activity, obviously in Britain, primarily in Scotland. So that would certainly be one way to get people involved. My book, Planning Your Time in Retirement, that's a bit more, I don't know what they cost, but these things aren't cheap. There is a paperback version now. And libraries hopefully will have a copy, but one could read that. The publisher saw it as a scholarly contribution, but also something simply enough written so that it could be of some interest to a more widely educated general public. Otherwise, what else can I add? I'm always available to talk. So we're going to give you my email address when we're finished here.
Sure.
And talk, and talk on the telephone.
Thank you.
Or if they prefer a Skype. So I don't do the social media. One, it bores me, but two, I think they're a bit insidious. It's best stay away from that stuff and get poisoned. So don't look for me on Facebook or Twitter or what have you. Come to the horse's mouth. And so email, the address that you guys have, would be fine.
That's great. We'll put it in the link when we share the podcast details. We can put those in the
website. And that can be, somebody who writes should say that I was suggested by Seniors Junction to get in touch. Perfect. So, but I don't have a lot of commercial stuff. Sometimes, more than anything, I get advice about how to improve the website. Well, that's to make it into a business, which it's not, if it was intended to be. And The website, in fact, was designed by Jenna Hartel, who herself studies serious leisure, hobbyist cooks. But she's in library and information science. So she knows about communicating in these modern ways. So she quickly developed a website in 2006. And that, it's been a big hit. And I don't think, apart from the book, and some other books might be important given specific interests, but the general perspective for seniors, the Roman Littlefield volume is the best for that purpose. Now, after we hang up, as it were, I may think of other things, in which case I'll get in touch with you.
Definitely. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much, Professor. This was just a joy for both of us. Thank you so much.
Yes.
What I'll do, I'll put you on the SLP mailing list. And going out shortly on that list is going to be a discussion of this set of podcasts from Britain and a link to it. So you can get some sense of that.
Perfect.
And otherwise I use it to announce books and items of interest in general. So it it doesn't happen very often. I might run that list three or four times a year, so you won't be pestered. It doesn't ask for any money, so we don't do that. Yeah.
No problem. Thank you.